Hello and welcome back to the conversation here on the right side. I am Michael Dwyer and I am joined today by my friend and colleague, Gary Kavanagh. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning. Why do you always say the conversation? It makes me think this is like a subgrouping of the podcast.
Well, I like to imagine that ourselves, the listener, are engaged in a conversation. We're engaged in a dialogue that we're trying to expand our horizons and discuss issues. Issues today which would include such things as divisions within the cabinet, the prospect of the election, and speeding, how it affects rural TDs. We'll be looking at incest and the death of the and the rise of the radical, hard, nasty right, and how it's worrying people across the Irish Times and right into the Independent, and how it's even affecting politics in the county of Wexford.
And we'll do it all in 30 minutes or less, or your money back.
Or your money back. If your pizza doesn't arrive, it'll be free. So, let's start, Gary, with the story that Shane Ross is trying to bring in a series of new regulations regarding the speeding and penalty points. And according to the Independent and other outlets, there is a plot afoot, a plot which is from rural TDs to oppose them, and to oppose them not only outside but in cabinet. He, now on the face of it, I don't know what you think, it seems to be not a piece of madness. I mean, I have got to the point, which is probably unfair, where everything I expect from this government is when it comes to new legislation and regulation, I expect it to be a really bad idea. Here, Shane is simply proposing, we're talking about back roads, not motorways, that the penalty increase, in some sense proportionately, with the amount by which you have broken the speed limit. Now, that means actually at the bottom level, if you're between sort of 1 to 10 kilometres per hour over the limit, the penalty actually will come down to 2 penalty points. But, for example, drivers who exceed the speed limit by more than 30 kilometres per hour will face a court prosecution and a €2,000 fine. He's getting support, apparently, from Leo and from Pascal. But people like Mike Ring, Joe McHugh up in Donegal, Heather Humphreys, and Gavin Monaghan, Mike Creed in Cork, Simon Harris. Simon Harris in Wicklow, yes, but he's in North Wicklow. That part of Wicklow that really is basically Dublin South. And Paul Keogh in Wexford.
Charlie Flanagan as well.
Is Charlie Ginnam?
Apparently so. Apparently he's come out publicly against it.
Of course, Charlie down in Leash Offaly.
I'm not... Here's the thing, though.
Yeah?
Is this actually that people are opposed to the bill that much? Or that Shane Ross is just so deeply unpopular on a personal level that they heard a new Ross bill was coming up and just went, I know we could stop that.
I think there may be a... We could speculate that there's an element to that, that anything that Shane produced at this stage is going to, well, it's not going to be welcomed in with open arms.
I think they've learned from the his attempts to get forward a judicial bill that, it's best to just keep him away from things. Put him on a bus somewhere.
Put him on a bus and keep him going.
Oh, actually, no, that's part of the problem. They've got the bus connect problem now. Ferries, maybe?
Ferries? Yeah, I don't know. There were concern about the ferry down in Ballyhack. Maybe he could go and do that.
Do you know what we could do?
What could we do?
Do you remember during the week, I'm not sure if you saw this, there was a story that the Dáil ordered a printer. They spent 808,000 on it.
On the printer itself, and then another 200 grand on taking walls down and stuff to fit it in.
Because it was larger than the building.
Yeah.
And now the staff are refusing to use it unless they get paid to upskill.
Sorry. This is a thing that happens regularly, particularly in very unionized environments.
Yeah, yeah, the upskilling.
You have to be paid extra to be shown how to do something which is going to make your life easier. But in the Dáil, to be used a printer. How complicated is this? How hard is this?
Well, it's an 800,000 printer. So I assume you're looking at a large industrial printer.
Yeah.
Not something relatively simple. However, it could actually be a good spend on money because some of these things, they can just print massive amounts and you will actually save on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably not the... I wouldn't imagine it's the kind of printer we're thinking of. However, this strikes me as the sort of high-stakes situation with many interested stakeholders that really someone who has the capabilities, the demonstrated capabilities, repeatedly demonstrated capabilities, I would say, of Shane Ross should be put to overseeing.
And its capacity to alienate people. I will advert to the fact that the restrictive practices occurring in Dáil Éireann is a subject we will be returning to, particularly their current policy of accepting mail only from certain people and up to a certain limit. But one of the other things that Ross wants to do here, this, now, the stuff about the speeding makes a degree of sense to me. For example, anybody speeding between 10 and 20 kilometres excess will get 3 penalty points and an 80 euro fine. The rise will increase to 4 penalty points and 100 euro fine for those who are 20 to 30 kilometres per hour over the limit. And that's, so you get 3 of those, you're gone. And I think the penalty points, obviously, far more than the monetary fines, do make people think. And I'm a town dweller, but in a rural county, and I am, one of the things I'm very aware is when you see people just tearing through, particularly very small villages or hamlets, and they're, people have the right, excuse me, to feel reasonably safe and comfortable, or that their children should be reasonably safe and comfortable walking, excuse me, sorry about that, walking along the side of the road in these villages, whereas you've got these chaps, and very often it is young guys, going in hell for leather. And effectively, the point system is the only thing that's going to cap, is going to modify that kind of behaviour. And there's a big difference as well, I would say, between going 15 or 20 k over the limit on an empty straight motorway at 2 o'clock in the morning. And in fact, I've always been of the opinion that if you have to speed limits on motorways, then they should be in some sense relative to the level of use of the motorways, and between say 12 and 5 in the morning we could knock it up to maybe 140 or 150. But if you're on a back road, a small country road, I mean, you'd be aware of this, Gary, when you're out in the country, 30k and an extra 30k is fast. That can be more than dangerous. And that's fine. But he also wants this thing where he wants to clamp down on motorists who drive without having their license in the car.
Which is how many countries do it.
You know, the license demonstrates that you have a license. Now, historically what would happen, and still can happen in Ireland, is if the guards stop you and you don't have the license. And this is this is a fairly recent phenomenon in Ireland, anyway, that you have to have it on your person when you're driving. In the last 10, 15 years?
Mm.
I don't like it. I don't like it, I suppose, because it's that smack of a thing, of a rule that was invented because you wanted a rule. It's like, if you go in most countries in Europe, you have to have an identity card. And if you say to people, well, why do you have to have an identity card? They say, well, you have to have an identity card so that people, if the police stop you and ask for your identity, you said, yeah, but why would the police stop you? Well, they stop you to check your identity. And it's a kind of a circular thing, which I don't like. It's a little bit like that here. You created a rule in order for the police to be able to catch you doing something. In this, he wants to remove the discretion of the Gardaí and allow you to produce your license at a later date and to have an automatic fine introduced. I don't like that. It's just, it seems to me, it's one of those rules that was introduced to give people the right to check if you're breaking the rule or not. Anyway, we will leave Miss the Minister Nor Miss Shane, I should say. We leave Shane Ross. I was thinking of Norris. We leave Minister Shane for the moment and going on to slightly lighter stuff.
I'm shocked that you would forget the Minister Ross's proud legislative accomplishments like that.
He got the guards back in Stepaside, didn't he?
I don't know if that's actually opened, but he got the agreement.
He got the agreement. Yeah, well, that's it's a step in the right direction, anyway. I'm sure, Gary, no more than myself, you spend most of your time reading reports on the Law Reform Commission.
I actually spend more of my time than I would freely admit. Recently, someone asked me what was the last thing I read for pleasure, and it was a law reform report, which if you've ever felt that your life is just slowly spiraling out of control, let me tell you, that is a point to recognise it.
Anyway.
In the most boring way possible.
There is, as in the words of Patricia Casey, Professor Patricia Casey of The Independent today, buried deep in a report on the Law Reform Commission conference, a review of whether or not the law on incest should be relaxed. The piece observes that consenting intercourse between an adult brother and sister, even if there is no risk of pregnancy, is a crime. And Mr. O'Malley questioned my question whether such conduct should be criminal. With reference to consenting intercourse between a brother and sister, even if there was no risk of pregnancy. We increasingly... The level of the most personal, basic personal elements of our life, it seems to be that notion of autonomy, personal freedom, is the ultimate guiding moral principle. And if some historical prohibition fails on the test of autonomy or liberty, then we seem to want to discard it fairly quickly. What do you think, Gary? Is there... Patricia starts the article with, "Oh, yuck," was my response. And there really is a disgust factor about this. Should we pay attention to that yuck response? Or should we say, you know what, that was an old thing, that was to do with the concern about very closely genetically related people having children. Today we have birth control, today we have abortion. You know, that's not really an issue. And if people are adult and they should, you know, if brothers and sisters want to do this, and we might find it odd, but you know what, how much odder is it than a lot of the other sexual activities that are perfectly legal?
I mean, on one hand, I do sort of feel, I should go on, do it. See what happens. Could be now, funny.
Is that out of a sense of I should go on, in the sense of you approve the principle of liberty, or because you're going to sit back and wait for what you anticipate might be some terrible consequences that you will find personally amusing?
There will be terrible consequences that I will find personally amusing.
God, you're an absolute sink of empathy, aren't you?
Look, you can tell people this is going to end poorly over and over. But eventually, you've just got to let the child put the hand on the stove. And perhaps occasionally hold the hand down.
Hold the hand down? I think that may be a bridge too far.
It's obviously going to be... It's the same with euthanasia, and it'll be the same with incest. They will just make a point that people should have the right to do anything they want. And they will start it by saying, well, we have abortion and we have genetic screening. So the major risk of incest is genetic, which I'm actually not sure is accurate as to what the major issue with incest is. And they'll get it through that way. And then, of course, when it goes through, there will be the argument that, well, I mean, everyone should have the right to have a family. And that'll go through, and it'll all go through. It'll all go through eventually.
You don't think that there ever will reach a point where there'll be a certain degree that there could be pushback where people will say, yeah, and I'm as liberal as the next guy, but you know what, lads? No.
I think that what we have seen in the currently existing society in the West is the idea of personal autonomy eradicating pretty much any other value. and that your options are either the fall of that society, in that society changes culturally in some way to value other aspects again, or just the inevitable end point of it will be things like this.
But do you think that this is, I mean, you say that this is the West. I have a sense that we are peculiarly prone to this in Ireland. But if you look, say, for example, in Germany, in many ways, Germany is now a socially more conservative country than Ireland.
It's actually substantially more conservative socially.
And I think that one of the reasons is what your observation there puts its finger on it, that Germans don't believe that autonomy and freedom are the only things. That Germany still, not still, Germany believes and kind of actively engages in the idea with notions like community, social responsibility, that there is a wider moral context that exists outside of some kind of atomistic liberalism where the only test of the morality of an action is whether or not it reflects my autonomous choice. German, say, now that will have outcomes which people may or may not like, but for example, issues like, say, same-sex marriage. It's not surprising that Germans, for example, are very suspicious about euthanasia and that kind of medical intervention in a way. If we look at their very close cousins, the Dutch, have a radically different... Dutch, far more individualistic, far more personal autonomy, far, in a sense, closer to the morality of Irish current society. But the Germans, very... very, very slow to follow the Dutch option. And again, you could extrapolate fairly obvious connections between German history in the 20th century and why that might be the case. But it seems to be the case. Italy, France, also, in some ways, much more... France is a much more secular country than Ireland, even Ireland of today is, and has been secular for a much longer period of time than Ireland is. And yet, in some ways, there is a greater floor of social conservatism or a point at which they say, okay, the individual can go so far, but then we have to stop.
Yeah, it's just, there's not... Irish culture is just not terribly advanced, I would say, in its approach to most things. Like, we don't like difficult things. So we're like, oh, church told us what to do for a while, did that, everyone pretty happy, and now we're just going to do this instead.
There's an oddness to it, though, that there seem to be two kind of parallel driving motives at the moment in Irish policy. At the one hand, if there's a sense that if there is something which I don't like or I don't approve of, I should ban it. On the other hand, when it comes to other kinds of, say, for example, if you're Catherine Noon and you're talking about the guy selling ice creams out of a van, and he has a jingle on his, you know, music playing so people can know there's ice cream, ban it. Chips. She doesn't like children eating chips. So ban chippers from going anywhere near. Ban the sale of Coke or sugary drinks. That kind of, which is anything to do with the body, the maintenance of the healthy body, that's sacredness. And yet, on the other hand, if it's anything touching on our, say, sexual or others, like maybe also, things like, say, smoking, marijuana, weed, that kind of thing, drugs, kind of falls in the middle between the two stools, and that's maybe why we have slightly different conflicting opinions on this.
You were asking about the disgust reaction.
Yeah.
I think animals, even plants, have mechanisms to avoid incest, because incest is unbelievably damaging.
Yeah.
It's not a good thing. And oftentimes things that we feel disgust towards have a basis, and just, it's an evolutionary response. It's easier to feel a strong aversion to something naturally to ensure it doesn't happen. Here's if you were curious about how bad it is,
yeah.
Here's a study of Czechoslovakian children.
Right.
Whose fathers were, whose parents were first degree relatives. In a situation where the same woman was impregnated by a non-relative, 7% of the children were born with a birth defect of some kind.
Okay.
When it was between first degree incest, 42% were born with a severe birth defect, and 11% were born with mildly impaired mentality. That is to say that less than half of all of the children of a first degree union will be healthy.
And what do we mean by first degree? Sibling or parent?
So first degree would, yeah, it would be sibling or parent or sibling and sibling.
Right. Okay. So historically, the first degree of consanguinity that you were allowed to marry were first cousins. But under the old church law, you had to demonstrate health in the family, as in the absence of any birth defect in the family, going back, I think it was 4 or 5 generations, which I imagine for most people, and certainly in Ireland where we have difficulty in recording, would have been pretty difficult to do. But you certainly had to demonstrate that on both sides that there was to some degree in recent history, there was no presence of a chromosomal problem. But that's incredible. The disgust mechanism, I suppose, if you're an evolutionary biologist or sociologist, would say the disgust response is an evolved one. And it's something we should pay attention to. It doesn't mean we're enslaved to it. I'm just curious, and I leave it at this. I thought it's interesting. I don't know why they have referenced only the sibling relationship here, brother and sister. Because if one accepts the principle of autonomy and freedom between adults, why they haven't referred to, say, father, daughter, and mother, son, I think is curious. Maybe that for some reason is a bridge too far. Maybe there's a belief that there is inevitably and always going to be a skewed power dynamic in that relationship, and therefore that you don't really ever have freedom. I don't know, but it's I'd be curious. I think maybe you're right, but there are
animals that are actually effectively bred to be immune to inbreeding, certain types of rats for laboratory studies and things of that nature. So, you know, maybe the problem will sort itself out in the long run.
I know.
But more likely we'll all just end up like the British royal family, and no one wants that.
If you're a dog breeder, dog breeders will regularly breed within the degrees of first siblings and parents and children, because you're looking for a particular kind of thing. There may be, shall we say, a certain amount of waste in that they have of genetic results, which are...
Sorry, I'm just thinking of the Bill Hicks joke, because a first degree incest or a relative is any relative you share 50% of your genes with.
Yeah.
So yes, it's your parents and yes, it's your siblings, but it would technically also be your children when you had them. So you could have children with your mother and then later sleep with those children. And it just reminds me of the Bill Hicks joke that the man showed me a picture of his family tree. It was a stump. So inbred, his left eye was in his right eye socket and his right eye was in his left eye socket.
That's a charming picture. Anyway, we'll move on and finish up with a story which is frightening. I'm sure it's frightened me. I'm sure it's frightening you, Gary. It's a couple of stories together about the rise of the right in Ireland. We start off, we're back with Verona Murphy, God love her.
My Verona.
Verona has become... Pretty one. Poor Verona has become... The Independent, certainly, I don't know if it's just one of those things. The Independent has a positive smorgasbord of unfortunate stories for Verona. The stories about a bullying case, stories about a partner in business who is not tax compliant, problems in the hauliers and all that. But there's now a story, Colton, I noticed, by Fionnuala Sheehan and the great Hugh O'Connell, which is basically saying that the, well, actually, sorry, not Hugh O'Connell, it's just Fionn Sheehan, that Finnegan doesn't want...
I think Fionn Sheehan is enough.
Fionn is enough, absolutely. Fionn is always enough.
Yeah, he's a good man. Good writer, anyway.
Yeah. In the Indo, he's one of the best. Fine Gael allegedly, and I'm very definitely using the word using allegedly on this one, have concerns that they're so worried about Murphy, who is an inverted commas ticking time bomb, that they want her to lose amongst fears of the amongst anti-immigrant fears, that there is allegedly pressure on Varadkar to drop to repeat the Bailey trick and drop the candidate. Now, okay, I'll ask you just straight off the top, Greg. Now, in the context of what we've heard, ticking time bomb Murphy, anti-immigrant fears, and Fine Gael dropping a candidate and basically conceding the seat to Fianna Fáil, what did Fiona Murphy say that was that?
I don't know. I haven't checked on her in a couple of hours.
Well, let's work on the basis.
With the speed she's moving at, I mean.
Yeah, well, let's work on the basis that Verona has...
Could be blacking up by now.
Let's work on the basis that Verona hasn't said anything horrendously controversial for the last 48 or even 72 hours. That what she has said is what was said that we're aware of. Even if you take a less than sympathetic view to it, was any of it straight up racist?
Was that nothing I heard was racist? Well, nothing I heard sounded racist. Racism is largely intent, I suppose.
Yeah, that's always, that's true.
Prejudiced, maybe at most.
You know, the immigrant comments. I thought they were foolish, but I didn't glean from them or from a wider anti-immigrant agenda.
No, I did like, one thing I always love about polls is where people try and explain why the polls are the way they are. Mm-hmm. Because most of the time we have no idea.
Yes.
Like you can kind of get, but it's very difficult to tell what the public actually cares about at all.
At any one moment in time, yeah.
But I did like the sort of Fine Gael falls in polls as voters react to Verona Murphy racist comments.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah,
that's that. No, I think that's about as likely as Fine Gael to stop dropping Verona and putting me up instead. I was talking to a number of people over the last little while who have been out canvassing, and I've been asking them what the reaction was regarding Verona. You know, where people on the doorsteps in a bait of anger because their notion that the people of Wexford would be represented by this horrible woman and racist views and anti-immigrant. And to my complete lack of surprise, they said those people who weren't really paying attention, which was the large number, the majority of people, were aware that she was in trouble in the papers about something, but they weren't really sure, the papers these days. Those who were aware of her comments, the people, shall we say, that would have been traditional voters of Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil, and not just them, others as well, didn't really see what she'd said that was so terribly wrong, but did maybe feel there was a little bit of an element, a couple of people say, now she could have stopped. She could have stopped when she was at it and not kept digging.
So there was a thing during the week where the Conservative Party, there was a debate on between Corbyn and Boris.
Yes.
And they renamed their Twitter account to Fact Check UK.
Uh-huh.
Now, it did say in the bio that it was a part of the Conservative Party, but they fact-checked the debate.
Yes.
As a fact-checker. And the reaction of the media, particularly some academics, but mostly the media, particularly those involved in fact checking,
yes,
including some Irish people, was that this was outrageous. I mean, it was just propagandist.
It was all the
fake news. That was all
howling, and howling they were.
I remember seeing as a polling expert on Twitter who was doing polling in the Midlands, and he said that if anyone in any of the polling groups he went to spontaneously talked about that, he would buy anyone who retweeted it a pint.
Yes.
Because, you know,
yeah.
No one outside Twitter cares.
No, they really don't.
I don't want to say the public is uninformed, because the public, I think, can often be a bit blurry on exact policy details, but they oftentimes have a surprisingly accurate sort of facsimile of what's happening with certain politicians.
Mm.
Like, they get the general idea a lot of the time. But yeah, no one cares. And there is sort of a thing here. The media deeply cares. I think a lot of people would just look at our comments and they'd either go, I think that's wrong, or maybe, probably not, but maybe.
I think what most people would, they might use the language, but in cases like, say, Horrocks or Grealish's case or others, there's some of it was silly, but a lack of nuance maybe was fundamentally the problem. That she might have been struggling towards a reasonable point, but she could have or should have said it differently or better. And some of the stuff was just silly, but none of it wicked. But this has all been put in the context, and I think we've seen in the last little while an upsurge in the number of stories coming out at us about the rise of the Irish right.
I saw Una Mullally's article on it, and I particularly enjoyed it because it starts by listing the things that let us know that the politics is drifting towards the right.
And I think that list is worth sharing because it is good gas.
So here we have a Fine Gael by-election candidate peddling a conspiracy theory that ISIS is a big part of the migrant population. The Taoiseach abandoning compassion, context and cop-on, and saying those in direct provision can leave at any time. As well as saying there are a lot of people coming to Ireland from Georgia and Albany coming in with fake documents, and that's a big driver of the increase in numbers in direct provision. I was going to say DP, but we absolutely cannot use that acronym. Independent TD Noel Graylish saying there are people coming over here from Africa to sponge off the system, and then highlighting inaccurate figures, which is also still an interesting point because people are saying the World Bank is inaccurate, the CSO are accurate, when both are actually entirely inaccurate. And then Lorraine Clifford-Lee criticised for using slurs against travellers. There's not a single thing on that list that's actually right-wing.
No,
like,
not
ideologically, there are people on the right who could do these things. There are people on the left who can do these things as well. There are many left-wing nationalists, and there are many left-wing anti-immigration people. Also, the point about Georgia and Albania is perfectly true.
Yes, which is worth pointing. I mean, that's the fact that she points this out as an example of the rise of the right, when it's actually just a what we could call a simple fact. Look at the numbers are printed and published by the government.
Yeah, we've gone through them before. They're pretty clear. But here's the thing. The thing about ISIS is a big part of the migrant population. Almost certainly false. I don't actually know what security standards we have in place there, but considering most of the direct provision people come from Albania and Georgia, but at this point,
not really
of a strong ISIS presence.
No, but to be fair to Murphy, I don't think Murphy was actually saying that they were a large part, but she was saying that there was a risk. And I think that was in the context of possibly of the return of a confirmed ISIS supporter to the state.
On the point about saying those in direct provision can leave any time,
mm-hmm.
Okay, the people who are in direct provision for a decade are not there because they're waiting to hear back from the Irish government. They're there because they're appealing. And they've appealed, and they've appealed, and they've appealed. They've been told no multiple times.
Yes.
They are choosing to stay on the off chance that they can get through. And I actually blame the NGOs primarily for that, because I think the NGOs are telling people that, you know, if you stick long enough. So that's also, I'd say that's perfectly true. Noel Grealish said there are people coming over here from Africa to sponge off the system here in Ireland.
I've no reason. Why would you doubt that? I mean, we know there are people coming from England to do it.
Now, if he had said the majority of people coming from Africa, that's a different thing.
Yeah.
But to say there are people coming over here to sponge off the system, yeah, that's part of the reason why people go from poorer countries to richer countries. I'm not saying it's a high percentage.
But also...
But it's undoubtedly happening. The inaccurate figures are inaccurate, but the other figures we have are also inaccurate, and we all seem to be believing those because they tell us...
But, no, no, sorry, just it's worth pointing. Yes, the center, the World Bank figures are... Well, we don't know if they're accurate or not, but we believe them to be inaccurate. The World Bank believes them to be inaccurate.
I suspect that they are not as inaccurate as we are being told, for the very simple reason that I saw someone reach out to the World Bank, and then when they shared the World Bank's response, they only shared parts of it.
Yeah, I think what we can say with reasonable certainty is that on the basis of figures that we do know from other contexts, other nationalities in other countries, figure of the world that used by the World Bank is very likely much closer to the reality than the figure given by a CSO, which is utterly incredible on the basis of experience in other countries.
I don't know if I would go that, but they both have clear methodological issues. And then the final thing she brings out is that Lorraine Clifford Lee was criticised for using slurs against travellers. This is Ireland. You don't need to be right-wing to have a slur against travellers. Nor, and this is sort of idea of any sort of slur against a racial group is a right-wing issue. There have been many prominent left-wing leaders who have despised various ethnic groups.
We are now, we are witnessing a Labour Party, which is about the most left-wing Labour Party we
have. It's under official investigation
ever seen.
For systemic anti-Semitism.
Systemic.
I think it was 12% of Jews in England said they would feel safe vote with Jeremy Corbyn as the leader of the country.
We've reached a point where historically, there were large sections of the Jewish community that certainly would have been born and bred into the Labour Party. There's a Maureen Lipman at the moment, as you might have seen on YouTube, is reprising a role that she became famous for around 30 years ago as a Jewish mother doing an ad for BT. She's now reprising it in the context of the current state of the Labour Party. And she says in it, you know, it used to be you got your Labour Party membership with your circumcision. Nowadays, the last poll done what's the name of the Jewish newspaper? It's the...
Jerusalem Times?
No, the English paper. It's the English... I can't recall it now. It's maybe the Jewish buzz. Anyway, it was like 80... you're looking at over 80% said they intended to vote Tory. I mean, incredible. Because of the disillusionment with the perception or the experience of systemic anti-Semitism within the Labour Party. So, also, the implication in this is that... What's the girl's name? Clifford Lee...
Lorraine Clifford Lee.
No.
Who is painfully woke.
That she is right wing, Gary? I'm sorry. Are we talking a shift in the Overton window there?
It's something I've noticed is about particularly the media in Ireland. There's a large part of Ireland that is authoritarian left, and they don't seem able to realise that people can have, like, a lot of the views they think are right wing are not actually on the left or right axis.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the libertarian, authoritarian axis.
Yes.
And they seem to think that any sort of authoritarianism must come from the right. Whereas the left has been a very big fan of authoritarianism. And there are a lot of Irish people on the left who are in that sector.
It's funny.
But they seem unable to distinguish it, which makes me think they just don't understand it.
It's funny you say that, because I don't think we talked about it. You may have seen it, but I was talking to some others. Friends about it. In one of the last pieces of polling that I was looking at, they included an analysis of the vote on a number of bases, but they included a little graphic showing the voters along the traditional economic axis, but then on the liberal and authoritarian axis.
Mm.
And the first thing they showed was that basically every party in Ireland is left-wing economically. Now, between sort of, shall we say, -1 and 0, that the Renew Ireland, I think, was the only one that qualified as being right of centre. Fine Gael is sort of hovering somewhere around the centre there. Fianna Fáil was the party which most closely reflected the values of its members and voters. Between the gap, there was a considerable gap between the opinions of, say, Sinn Féin voters and Sinn Féin leadership.
Mm.
But what was really interesting was all of the parties were clustered, again, shall we say, between 0 and 1 in the quadrant around liberalism. But there was a significant part of the voter bloc,
which I think it's about a third of the voting population,
which was economically left, but authoritarian. Yeah. And nobody is there. There's no political. If anybody wanted to start up a political party, and I think that's what we're seeing in the rest of Europe, we're seeing a shift to the left. The Tories have definitely on economics in Britain shifted to the left, and you're seeing this with a lot of the Christian Democratic parties or conservative parties on economics shift to the left. Look at Poland, look at the Czechs, look at the Hungarians. Their economics, they're called conservatives, but their economics are not what you and I would consider to be classic sort of Thatcherite conservative economic policies at all. Their conservatism is much more related to the idea of nation, cohesion, society, and social conservatism than an economic.
Yeah, it's been the formula that across Europe has largely led to what would be termed the populist right. Succeeding electorally has not been the right-wing policies. It's been the adoption of left-wing, pro-nationalisation, pro-social support kind of policies while taking a more socially conservative stance. And so far that has just devastated existing parties.
Certainly, that's, I think, if you look at actually Italy, we talked about a while ago, that's looks very, very like what's happening in the Italians. That even the right-wing part, the Lega, would have historically been a much more free market, is moving to the left, but maintaining a social that sense of social conservatism, and it's starting to really reap rewards for them all over Europe. Anyway, I think you're quite at the point. Speaks to the point that the people on the left here seem to have no awareness of this at all.
It's interesting in that. They don't actually seem to realise the shape of it. Like, everything to them is just the right and the far right. And they actually have no ability to differentiate between different types of the right or the authoritarian left. And it just makes me curious how much they can differentiate anything else.
Well, I think there's also an element that this. I think they're ideologically or philosophically committed to the idea that if you're on the right, it really is just a matter of shade, but you're going to hell. You're going to hell anyway. And there is also the very sensible political position is they want to move the centre. Margaret Thatcher, when one of the single most important things she did for what getting on more than a generation of politics was, she came in where the centre of politics had swung significantly to the left. By the time she left, policies, she had dragged the centre to the right, so that the kind of policies that Tony Blair and his Chancellor pursued for the first, say, five or six years of their government would have been as right-wing or more right-wing, in fact, than policies pursued by the Tory party in the 70s. So the left, naturally, they're sensible, they want to drag the centre. If you drag the centre, then you're a long way down the road to achieving your agenda.
Do you want a fun story that tangentially relates to Maggie Thatcher?
I always want a fun story.
So I was talking with my girlfriend about whether or not we'd have children, and the sort of naming. And she was like, "Well, if we have a daughter, I want to name her Maggie after my grandmother." Internally, I was going, "Yes." And Thatcher.
Yeah. Okay.
She was not well. I made the mistake of telling her that, and it was sort of what? Like, no, it can be for both your grandmother and Margaret Thatcher. She broke the miners.
She did. She broke the miners. She restored democracy to Britain. Who rules Britain? Nobody ever asked the question again after Thatcher. Anyway, I think on that rather cheerful note, we're going to say goodbye for the time being. We shall be be back on Wednesday for our midweek review. Until then, it's goodbye from me.
And I would like to notify the listener that we didn't do that in 30 minutes or less, so your next pizza will be free.
Yes, but as long as it has pineapple. I have to have pineapple in the pizza.
And as long as you steal it. Because we're not giving you money.
No.
All the best.